No.
So we have to do this.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market reminds you that every bite has a story. So whether it's a tomato, a muffin, or a T-bone steak, your conscious food choices can change the planet. Because at Whole Foods Market, every single purchase you make helps us support things like animal welfare, organic agriculture, equitable trade, and energy offsets. Let's think before we eat. Let's retake our plates. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food. Culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. I spotlight good food fighters and the culture of the good food movement. From chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today we will be talking the beloved Brooklyn Flea and the next big small brand contest. If you're listening live to Hot Grease on HeritageRadioNetwork.com, our call-in number is 718-497-2128. Ingredients for a uber cool community. A gathering place, food, corners of vintage and new discoveries. Also, let's stir in the greatest contest on earth. In the studio, we have Eric Demby, co-founder of Brooklyn Flea and Brooklyn and Fernando Music from the next big small brand. Welcome to Hot Grease.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Nicole. Thanks for having us.
Let's talk modern day gathering spaces for niche communities outside of New York City. Is New York City the land of subcultures, or can we find examples somewhere else? Anywhere else?
You're asking about gathering places not in New York City?
Yeah, because I was in Boston this weekend. I'm like, where the hell are the gathering spaces for folks?
Right. Well, you know, they are obviously all over the world. The Flea specifically is sort of informed by markets all over the world that I've been to or even just heard about. And I love the way markets in places like Madrid or Istanbul or like in Thailand are so not only physically integrated into their communities where they like literally take over the streets for a day or a weekend, but also the way that they feel like they've been there forever. And I think that's a really important thing for a public market and a gathering place to have, is not to feel like it's been randomly placed somewhere and because it's a good real estate location, but that it feels like it's come from within the physical place where it happens, and that it has sort of come there because of forces beyond just itself and the people that want to create it. So to me, those kinds of places exist everywhere. They may not always be places of commerce, though.
Aha, that's the key. Okay, gotcha. So I'm in love with this great organization. I don't know if it's an organization or effort in Oakland called Forge Oakland by Asawa Wadu. I think I'm probably screwing her name up, but perfect example of bartering and fruits and solution to food access. Does one have to solve a problem or create a great idea or create a project to have a great idea?
I'm not sure exactly what you're asking me, but
well, I guess what I'm asking, if you have this idea, do you have to solve a problem, or can you just say, oh, this is a great idea, this would just be cool to do?
I see what you're saying. I don't know if there's a yes or no answer to that question, but in the essay answer,
the essay answer. Wow.
Just because I'm here talking about the Flea, presumably, I would say that the flea is an idea as well as a place. And I think that that's part of why people like it and why they go there and why when they do go there, they find something that they're surprised by and that they like and want to return to. And I think that in New York City, you do have a lot of projects that are created mostly to solve solutions, usually mostly to make money. I think that the flea is, in addition to a for-profit business, is legitimately a community-building exercise.
So did the flea come about as a solution to a problem, or was it just a great idea?
No, the solution, the problem, such as it was, I don't know if it was a problem, was that the Chelsea flea markets of yore, that had their heyday like in the late 80s and 90s, on 6th Avenue in the 20s, mostly vanished due to real estate forces. Like there are condos and office buildings on those locations now. And so they're really, New York City, you know, biggest city in America, greatest city in the world, had no major flea market. So, you know, that's a problem in some sense. And I think that the flea exists now, not just as a flea market, but as also an outgrowth of, or not an outgrowth of it. It exists as part of what's been happening in Brooklyn specifically, you could say over the last 5 years, 10 years, 20 years.
Okay. That's interesting. 'Cause I guess my perception, I didn't know about the Chelsea thing. I don't know why I didn't know that it was, I just thought it was a great idea, but that's great. You should totally write a book. I see all the press. People ask you the same questions over and over. I hope I don't do that today. And I think the book should be titled The Basic Guide to Creating a Fabulous Community that everyone loves. What do you think? You think book?
I think a book is a great idea. You know, I was a journalist for a long time.
Exactly. That's why I brought this up. Yeah.
And, you know, a book is a lot of work. And I have a small child and a wife that I love and I like to spend time with. And books are time suckers. But besides that, I think that, and I think it's interesting what you say about, you know, creating a community. A lot of people ask the question about, you know, the flea has created this wonderful community. And I'm a really strong proponent of the fact that the community was already there. Community is a weird word. You have to define it very narrowly, in my opinion.
True.
The community existed. Brooklyn is not something that I invented. And what's happening in Brooklyn was happening before and after the flea. But the point is that it gave it a central gathering place. And it gave a place like Brooklyn, which is incredibly decentralized, as is most of New York City, but Brooklyn especially. And I learned this partly from working for the borough president, Marty Markowitz. We would promote Brooklyn as a tourist destination. And, you know, people want to come to Brooklyn from all over the world. They know that it's cool and they know there's a lot going on here, but there's not like, there's no Statue of Liberty. There's no Empire State Building. There's not that one place where, you know, you can go and sort of get some sense of the place. And I think that the flea has sort of emerged as that.
I'm joking. That was a joke.
I would argue that Coney Island is a really great example of it as well. It's just a little far away.
So back to the book, what would you title some of the chapters? More so elements of creating niche communities.
Well, you know, I don't always think of myself as a community maker. I think that the community, the best thing I can do is be hands off about community. I'm very laissez-faire about things like this. I grew up in a community in Maine. I'm calling it a community.
Where?
In central Maine, north of Skowhegan, my dad and his first wife moved up there in like 1966. They were New York City kind of freaky artist people, and they moved up there and bought 100 acres of land in the middle of nowhere, started a farm, cows, pigs, chickens, started having kids. You know, my dad got divorced and he went back to New York and found my mom, so to speak, and brought her back up there. Lots of other folks from New York City moved up there. It was an intentional sort of living situation where people bought hundreds, if not thousands, of acres and just sort of started living up there. So I have a very different sort of identification with community personally. And I'm not someone that wants to create a community. I want to create a place where the community can happen. So I'm very into this idea of free and open public spaces, especially in modern day America, especially in modern day New York City, where most space, even if it's technically public, is still privatized or privately owned in some way. So I have a lot of intellectual thoughts about community, and I think that that would be a really interesting starting place for a book. Rather than people assuming that the flea started this thing, the flea is more of a conduit or a sort of facilitator of community.
So, yeah, we would have to have a cool title minus the word community. Huh? We've used that word like 20 times in the last 10 minutes.
It's true. It's true. But, you know, people use the word community about the flea all the time because it does exist there. And it is what people are technically sort of reacting to, is that there is this sense of togetherness. Maybe right. That's a better word, right? Where people are working with each other instead of against each other. The competition is healthy instead of, you know, disaster or, you know, detrimental. And, you know, I think that there is a collaborative feeling that is, that has a lot to do, especially with how Brooklyn is sort of distinct from places like Manhattan.
Yes, yes. We are going to take a short break and come back with more Brooklyn Flea and the next big small brand. Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. And if you are on Twitter, you can follow us, HRN Updates with an S. That's our Twitter handle. Or find us on Facebook, Heritage Radio Network. Are you listening to this show and thinking, I need to turn my rosemary pecan recipe into a business? Well, Fernando Music, co-founder of the Rooster Design Group, is here to give you the deets on becoming a big, small brand star. Fernando.
Indeed. Hi.
First question, do you have to live in New York to submit your food product and concept?
Good question. We get it a lot. This year, the contest is New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Connecticut.
Oh, okay.
We've branched out a little bit by one state. Next year, we will be national.
Really? So what are some key things that folks should know about the contest? And explain the actual contest. People listening, I'm like, what the hell are they talking
right,
about?
Right. Well, the Next Big Small Brand contest is a contest that we created to reward entrepreneurialism in food. Back to this community idea, it was something that we saw that people were doing and wanted to be a part of, and we wanted to cultivate and support. So we created the Next Big Small Brand contest, which was created by a design firm to give a prize of branding and marketing to a deserving entrepreneur. To get them on their way and started living the life that they want to live, living their dream.
What's the submission deadline? How do people mail their stuff in? Do they have to do more than one sample? Or
good question. There's a website, bigsmallbrand.com, nextbigsmallbrand.com, sorry. And the application process is open until November 11th. There's a pretty simple form on the website to fill out, basic information plus a 500-word essay.
Oh, wow.
Why you? Why are you the next you know, less than 500 word essay. Why you? What about your product is compelling and why should you be the next big small brand? Send us some photos. We're going to look at and evaluate everything and choose the semifinalists just before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Those semifinalists will come in and we'll taste their product. We'll meet the people. We'll talk about what their dreams and hopes and aspirations are and narrow it down to finalists.
So people do not have to submit their products
or
before November 11th.
Not just yet. No, no. The submission process is just a description of what it is you're doing.
Cool. Any other cool things that people, because this is year number two of the contest, things that people forgot to do last year that they need to remember, like in their 500 word essay?
I think the people are doing it just the way they should. Everybody is an individual and everybody is unique, and the people talk about the things that are important to them, and we can pick up on what's compelling about what it is that they're doing. And it's not, you know, it's not just one thing. It's really an aggregate of all of the pieces. It's who you are. It's what you believe in. It's your product. It's the ability for the product to resonate with, you know, in the marketplace, whether that be at the Brooklyn Flea or at Whole Foods, and, you know, in within the whole entire spectrum.
I'm curious about a typical day at the Rooster Group. The next big small brand is just a small project of your business. What's a typical day like for you guys?
That's what I ask myself every day. Well, we're a branding firm. We've been around for about 11 years, and we work on a lot of different kinds of projects. We have clients at the very local level, like the Municipal Art Society, for whom we had a meeting today. We're actually doing an interesting project about. It's a guide to Lower Manhattan that's going to be given out to jurors. Very niche and kind of fun and interesting project. And it's a way to look at the city that we live in a new way. And it's, you know, really fun. Highline is a big client of ours. We do all the branding and marketing for the Highline. We've just done a very big project and are still in the midst of a very big project for a major American automobile maker, launching a new car.
I have to ask about the Highline and food. You know, we have Eric in the studio. Are there any Brooklyn Flea? I see that they're getting a new food vendors randomly. Brooklyn Flea Highline connections.
It's interesting that you asked that, Nicole. As things happen in this city, it's not as big of a world as you imagine it is.
I know it's not. It's small.
We think that the Highline and the Flea have a lot in common.
Yes.
And I think the Highline agrees. There are all kinds of issues that come with having food on publicly owned, especially parkland. And so I think the Highline is taking time, as they should, to figure out exactly the right way to do it. The Highline, as everyone knows, well, maybe doesn't everyone know, the Highline is a very expensive project. It only gets some small amount of its funding from the city as a park. And so there are all kinds of goals that the Highline has that will either allow or not allow the Flea to be involved at some point in the future. We would love to do it. That's the short answer. I think it's a perfect fit. Some of our vendors have been up there or down there or wherever they end up. But the Highline is just beautiful. And we love being involved in, you know, sort of like majestic spaces like under the Brooklyn Bridge or the One Hanson Bank or, you know, wherever we go. And so, that would be cool. That's my answer.
It is very clear that both of you guys have the tools to blow up brands, blow up in a good way. I'm thinking about Kings County Jerky. They've been on the show before. Early Bird Granola. Kombucha Brooklyn, all clients or winners or participants with the Rooster Group. And some of them have been at the Flea.
Yeah. Yeah. Nikisha from Early Bird Granola, it was a client, and we've seen her star rise. And that's been one of the things that's given us, the reason to keep going with the project, with the contest. It's, you know, to see her reach her goals and blow up just like that is what makes us really happy. And Kombucha Brooklyn, were the winners last year of the first Nick's Big Small Brand contest.
So Nikisha, she was not a part of
first... she was a client.
Oh, okay, cool. So you did all of her branding?
Yes.
As we see it now?
Yes.
Cool.
And prior to that, the first food project was Salvatore Brooklyn. And we did Salvatore Brooklyn because Betsy is an old friend, and we were working for a lot of clients for whom projects were very, very, very long. And it was an opportunity to do a project, get it in the studio, turn it around inside of a couple of weeks, and get a little shot of energy in the studio and help out a friend. And we just enjoyed the space so much, we decided to pursue it a little bit. And that's, you know, then came Early Bird and quickly turned into the Next Big Small Brand contest.
So it was a no-brainer to get Eric involved. It was just natural synergy, right?
I don't know. Ask Fernando. I mean, he invited me to do it. But yeah, I mean, I think that the when I saw that they had worked with the Salvatore Ricotta girls, I just call them the Ricotta girls. I think everyone does. And Early Bird. I was really happy to get involved. And it's actually been really helpful for me since then. Because for a while there, the Flea, so many people applied to sell food at the Flea. And I feel really bad that I don't get back to a lot of them to tell them that it's not that we don't have room or that it overlaps too much with a vendor we have already. But folks like Salvatore and Early Bird, it's taught us a lot about, it's taught me a lot about, so it's actually, I think it's a lot easier to make delicious food than it is to brand yourself as a business. And really, I pay, not cynically, but I pay as much attention, if not more now, to someone's marketing approach, mm-hmm. to what their visuals look like, and to what their sort of like short and long-term goals are for their business, as I do to how good their food tastes. Because, you know, it's like, unless you have something going on, you'll just sort of like, you'll come to the Flea, there'll be thousands of people there, they'll be excited that you're the new food vendor, they'll buy up all your product, but then you'll, you know, who knows what's going to happen to your business. You may not be able to have the capacity to show up again next right. week. So it's really important that, you know, in business these days, so to speak, you got to know what you're doing with your brand.
No doubt. We are going to take a short break. Stick with us if you're listening live. We'll be back with more food, food, food.
Them stakes is high when you talking about stakes is high. You know them stakes is high. We be talking about stakes is high. You know them stakes is high. The Instamatic focal point bringing damage to your borough. Be some brothers from the east with the beats that be thorough. Got the solar gravitation, so I'm bound to pull it. I gets down like brothers are found, ducking from bullets. Gun control means using both hands in my land. Yeah. Where it's all about the cautious living. Migrating to a higher form of consequence. Compliments. A struggling that shouldn't be notable. Man, every word I say should be a hip-hop quote.
I'm sick of bitches shaking asses. I'm sick of talking about blood. Sick of Versace glasses. Sick of slang.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. This program is being sponsored by Whole Foods Market. They're also one of the judges and sponsor of the Next Big Small Brand.
That's right. Kara Rubin, who's a buyer, is a judge, as she was a judge last year, and Whole Foods is a sponsor.
Cool. And let me give a Southern Girls hug to Roberta's Restaurant. We're here at Roberta's, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Confession, Eric, I didn't tell you this before the show. Mm. I moved to New York to attend Brooklyn Flea every weekend.
No way.
Joking. But really, Brooklyn Flea and Georgia kicked off, me leaving Georgia kicked off at the same time. I moved or found out I was moving here in like April 2008. And I was like Googling online and I was all excited. Like, what the hell is this Brooklyn Flea thing? So the first weekend I was here, I went to the Brooklyn Flea.
Was it the opening weekend?
Not the opening weekend, because I came like a month after that.
Was it raining?
No.
No, it always rained on us at the beginning.
No, it did not rain.
It was very rainy in the beginning.
I'm not going to ask you this question, because I know folks probably have asked you this a million times, but I do want to know this. From conception to birth, what was the time period?
Actually, I was just telling someone this earlier. I believe that Jonathan Butler, my business partner in the Flea, who...
Brownstoners.com.
Brownstoner.com, correct. He and I believe, met, it might have even been November 1st of 2007. Might have been 3 years ago today. And the first market was April 6th of 2008. So 5 months. 5 months from conception to birth.
And did you anticipate being a curator of the best food in Brooklyn? Did you know the food thing was going to be so huge?
I didn't know that, but I wasn't surprised. When I worked for Marty Markowitz, I knew the Red Hook food vendors, and they were in this sort of like quasi limbo when the Flea was starting. Mm-hmm. And I convinced Cesar Fuentes, who sort of organizes the Red Hook food vendors, to have the Flea be this sort of like satellite sanctuary for them while they were in limbo. And when I convinced them, it was partly because their food is so great. I knew it was going to give us a little publicity bump. And then when I convinced the Salvatore Ricotta girls to do the Flea, and they told me that they were going to learn how to make cannoli shells from this guy in Bensonhurst, I started to get a sense that there was something going on. And then when people started writing about it, like in February and March before we opened, I started to get a sense of how excited people would be and that it would bring people in. But we have like almost 40 or 45 food vendors in the market now, whereas we had like maybe 10 at the beginning. So this year we were aware of it over the winter, and we decided to blow it out. We'll probably blow it out even more next year.
So address the statement, the Flea, it's getting boring. People have said that, they've tweeted that, they love the Flea. And they still go, even though they say it's getting boring.
Yeah.
But they're still there. What do you have to say to them?
I would never say anything to anyone.
Here you go. Open airwaves.
I would just say that the Flea is a lot of things to a lot of people. And, we have a lot of vendors that come every week. And then we have a huge amount of turnover and a lot of new vendors every week as well. I think if you go there every week, you could start to feel that way. That makes sense to me. But the reality is that the vendors who sell there, that's their livelihood. That's their revenue. That's their storefront. And they sell what they know is going to sell. And the food vendors, you know, it's the same deal for them. You know, they rely on people that come there every week. They rely on people that are coming there from all over the world who are going to go there once in their lifetime. So, you know, boring if you go there every week. I don't know. I feel like we work really hard as organizers to keep the market fresh, and the vendors themselves are working incredibly hard to find new merchandise during the week, and the food vendors are coming up with new products. So, you know, we're always moving around to cool new locations.
Yeah, I was about to say that. I mean, for folks who, if you're listening outside of Brooklyn, or people who haven't gone to the Flea in a while, I mean, originally it was on Saturday outside, and the scoop now is Saturday's your...
Originally it was on Sundays, now we're on Saturdays.
Yeah, I said that wrong, sorry.
Well, you know, I mean...
I like it. I like the switch.
It's all good.
At historic Williamsburg Savings Bank.
We're at what's called Skylight One Hanson, which is actually an event rental space. And they would kill me if I didn't say
ding,
so.
Ding, ding, ding.
You did plug. Your sponsor, I did my sponsor. Everybody's got
to
get paid.
It's a gorgeous place, really. I need to have an event there.
It's a beautiful place, and we're actually on three floors there. There's the mezzanine, and there's the lower level, which some people think is a little janky, but we think it has a lot of heart, and the vault is down there, and it's it's a beautiful space, and every time I walk in there, I really just can't believe that it's sort of like our home. You know what I mean? It's really bizarre that this incredibly... It's the most majestic place, you know, and then there it is. That's where my business happens on the weekends. It's really kind of a mind blowing would be the word.
So two questions about the space. You did curated something in the city last year, a holiday market. And I also remember a market at the Masonic Temple holiday. Are you doing anything special for the holiday?
You did your homework. So
I'm a fan of the Fleet. Everybody knows me knows that.
No, so. I mean, most people don't remember the Masonic Temple. So Gifted is our holiday market, which we sort of spontaneously started in 2008 at the Masonic Temple across from the Fleet because it was December. And suddenly we realized that vendors don't really like to sell outside when it's horizontal sleeting. So we did the Masonic Temple. Last year we were in the Tower Records Annex in the city. In Manhattan at East 4th and Lafayette. And so this year it's happening at the bank because it's so beautiful that we think it lends itself to a certain holiday festive feel. December 15th to the 23rd. So we're actually just doing 9 straight days there from 11 to 7. And it's going to be really great. It's actually going to be a lot of new faces that don't normally do the Flea. So, and, you know, it's like vintage and new things and art. And I don't know, it's going to be really cool. And we're also going to have Design Sponge is like our sort of media partner, so they're helping us curate it and do some fun events. And we're gonna have this giant holiday tree that we're gonna decorate with vendors' items that are for sale inside the market.
Not boring. So all y'all folks saying the Flea is boring. Do you hear all this great stuff? The holiday tree. See?
Sometimes I wish it was boring.
See? So behind the Flea fun facts, Fernando, you live in BK, you live in Fort Greene, so I know you have some. Tell me about some fun, cool stuff you picked up at the Flea. And Eric, you have to tell me like some really cool tips that people don't know, and no one has ever asked, and you've never told anyone about the Flea. Fernando, you first.
Well, I have a couple of kids, and I live in Fort Greene, and we go there every Saturday for lunch.
Yeah,
because everybody wins, and I don't get bored of the porchetta sandwich.
Yeah.
I don't get bored of the lobster.
That's my favorite. I remember the lobster roll was $10.
Yeah.
It was 12. They've gone up like $2. But anyway, yeah.
A lot of great things. I'm actually looking for something specific. I'm looking for a Casio synthesizer for my 7-year-old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
My 1-year-old plays with a Casio synthesizer.
Yeah.
It's a good, apparently it is a good a drumming instrument.
Oh, get out. The floor with. Really? Yeah. Let me make a note of that.
No, you can just bang it on the floor. It makes its own rhythm.
I have a
really
question.
Really entertaining.
I have a question about the vendors arriving. No one has a car in Brooklyn. How are these people getting there? Are they renting zip cars?
What do you mean no one has a car in Brooklyn?
I mean,
you walked around the street.
Not no one has a car, but I'm like,
if you're a
do
vendor
all of
the
these
Flea,
vendors have cars? How are they getting stuff in there? What time do they show up?
Everyone gets there at 7 a.m. By 10 a.m., the market is open. There's
seven.
A really cool slideshow if you go on our website of this guy did a he took photographs from 6 to 10 a.m. one morning because really the vendors get there at 6 to get the good parking spaces and to line up and get in the market first, because there's developed this sort of subculture. This will go to your other question, one of the tricks. You can sort of go to the Flea before it opens and sort of buy stuff before it's technically on sale for the market.
Fun fact number one.
That's how flea markets work, really. And the Flea has never really had that until this year. And now we get these kind of hardcore collectors who like sneak in.
Who the hell wants to get up at 6 a.m.?
You know, that's your life. That's what you do. And it's like you get there at 6. Everyone's drinking their coffee. It's a really beautiful moment at that time. The sun's always just coming up. It's kind of a little misty. Everyone's kind of, you know, it's like dinosaurs rising from their slumber. And like people are moving big stuff around. I don't know. It's a really wonderful time, I have to say, when you go to the Flea, when people are loading in. It's you see people in this really special time and moment. And so, yeah, you can go in there and, you know, you might get stopped, but you could tell them I said it was okay. And you could go in there and try to buy stuff. It's kind of fun.
All right, y'all. Y'all hear that? Eric, Fernando, thank you for joining us on Hot Grease. Listeners, if you want more information about the next big small brand contest, Fernando, they can go to
nextbigsmallbrand.com.
And Brooklyn Flea, you guys are online.
Brooklynflea.com. We have a Facebook page, Brooklyn Flea, and we have a Twitter handle that's BK Flea. And we have a mailing list that you can sign up for on the website.
Cool. Thank you guys for listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. My show airs live every Monday at 3:30 Eastern Time. If you're not listening live and you are listening to me in your MP3 player, thanks for subscribing. Until next time, always take the road less traveled.